Practice commences in Green Bay on Wednesday, the first of the week, as the Packers get ready for their upcoming matchup against Washington in the wild card round of the playoffs. Are they equipped to win a game on the road? We'll find out with Nathan Yockey of ProFootballFocus.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a playoff game against the Washington Redskins. To do that and recap the Packers' final regular season game one last time, we have a guest joining us on the phone.
Expert interview.
We have Nathan Yockey of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday. Nathan, how you doing today?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How about you?
Good, good. Glad to have you on, as always. Nathan, is like I said, we take one last look back at this season finale against the Minnesota Vikings. Kind of been a common theme all season long. The Packers passing game once again struggles last week. Where does the blame go this week, with quarterback Aaron Rodgers or his receivers?
I actually don't have a great answer for this one, since the problems seem to be a little different than it's been in previous weeks. When Rodgers was not under pressure, things seemed to be going just fine. He completed 77% of his passes, averaged 8.1 yards per attempt, and had a touchdown. So this is the first time in a while that we've seen Rodgers play like his usual self when there was no pressure. However, half the time he was under pressure, and during those times he was sacked 20% of the time, completed less than half of his passes, and had an interception. And typically when you think of a quarterback being under pressure nearly half the time, that means the offensive line had a bad game. But that wasn't necessarily the case in this one. Rodgers was holding on to the ball a lot longer than usual. His average time to throw is typically one of the highest in the league at 2.96 seconds. But in this game in particular, it was 3.35 seconds. So Rodgers, it could be that he wasn't finding the receivers at the right time, and therefore holding onto the ball longer, or it was the receivers recovered, so Rodgers was holding onto it. But Rodgers typically only throws the ball away once or twice per game. He did so six times in this one, which is more than we've ever seen him do in any game in his career. And then we also credited Rodgers with more pressure being his fault than any other game. And it was eight pressures total in this one that we credited to Rodgers holding onto the ball too long, and that's more than we credited to Rodgers all of last season. So it could be that Rodgers just didn't get to the receivers in time, or it could be that the receivers weren't getting open and Rodgers was trying to hold onto the ball rather than force something.
As usual, it's just never one thing you can pinpoint. You talked about pressure, Nathan. Let's take away the play of Josh Sitton, who was obviously put in a difficult situation being asked to play left tackle. But how did the rest of the Packers' offensive line hold up?
I think the offensive line did a great job in this one. T.J. Lang and Corey Linsley, they were their usual selves, having good games. Brian Bulaga is coming off of his two best games of the season. So after seeing him struggle for a lot of this season, Bulaga is getting hot at the right time. And then this was by far Lane Taylor's best game of his career. They all allowed a couple pressures in this one, but on 54 pass blocks, you'd expect any offensive lineman to allow a couple pressures each. So I don't think that was too big of a deal. And then in the run blocking, I was impressed by all of them as well. I know it might be hard to believe that they all did well run blocking when the Packers only averaged 3.1 yards per carry. But a lot of times when something went wrong, it was either a receiver's blocking or Andrew Corliss's blocking that led to the bad play. And then there were also a lot of times where the Packers were in short yardage situation, running the ball with 1 or 2 yards to go for a first down. And they were able to convert these all 4 times they were in the situation, but they only gained 14 yards on them. So even though they were successful plays, they didn't gain a lot of yards. So even though it wasn't Josh Sitton's best game, the left tackle remains out for this next game, I would say the Packers should stick with this offensive line combination, since having Sitton at left tackle and Lane Taylor at left guard isn't the most ideal situation, but still they did a lot better than Don Barclay was in there.
Yeah, I would agree, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's just a tough situation if you don't have David Bakhtiari. Josh Sitton isn't an ideal left tackle, but he's better than the other options, I think. Nathan, I think a lot of people were mad at the play calling with the Packers getting away from Eddie Lacy in the running game after having so much success early in the game. Is that criticism warranted?
I don't think so. I looked at the play-by-play in this one, and it seemed like the Packers tried to stick with the run game, and it just wasn't working later on in the game. Starting midway in the second quarter, they had one drive. They ran and lost 2 yards. The next play, they threw it to Lacy and lost 7 more, so that left them in a passing situation. Next drive, there was just 3 minutes left in the half, and nearly every team by that point is in their 2-minute drill, even though there's 3 minutes left, so I understand not passing there. Then in the second half, they started off with a run, lost 5 yards, they ran twice. The second run, they lost 5 yards, which put them in 3rd and 10. Next drive started with a run for no gain. Following drive, they ran 3 times, but ended up in a 3rd and 12 situation. And then by this point, the Packers were down 17. Even though they were down 17, they ran with Starks a couple of times on the following drive, just since Lacy had been in for so many consecutive plays. And then by that point, the Packers were still down 2 scores in the 4th quarter and just opted to have John Kuhn in there to help keep Rodgers clean. So I don't think there was any real point looking at the down distance and score situations that I would have really said the Packers should have tried running more.
There you go. Interesting. Packers unwarranted criticism if you wanted to point the finger at Mike McCarthy for getting away from the run. He tried, didn't do all that great in the second half. Perhaps a case of a little bit of running out of time where they necessarily had to go to the pass. Nathan, you mentioned John Kuhn. I was interested if anything really stood out about Kuhn, because he seems to be playing one of the biggest roles of his entire career the past few weeks, especially in regard to his snap count and in comparison to the other running backs. Did you notice anything?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting to see his role in this one, and I think it had a lot to do with the struggles the Packers have been having in the past game. On that first drive, they were definitely trying to establish the run. They were using their 2 running back, 2 tight end personnel for nearly the entire drive, and all season long, they were using it maybe once or twice per game. So using it, I think it was 14 times on that 15-play drive, was really interesting to see, and Kuhn was in for all of those plays. And then late in the game, it was for the pass protection, because Rodgers was holding on to the ball long. And Starks has been pretty good in pass protection, but not great in that area, and Eddie Lacy has been a little worse this year, even though he had been good in pass protection in previous years, where Kuhn, he ended up as our third best running back in pass blocking efficiency this year. And it's his 4th season where he's ended up somewhere in the top 10. So, Kuhn does one thing really well. It's pass protect. So I think that's why they were using him so much late. So, in recent weeks, it's really been his role to block well, and he's been doing that fine recently. So I could see him continuing having that role into the playoffs.
Yeah, you can't take that away from John Kuhn. He is a very good pass protector as a running back. We're talking to Nathan Jahnke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, if we look at the positives coming out of this game on the defensive side of the football, I think Clay Matthews looked like he was getting back to the player we've come to know and love. How would you assess his play this past game?
I'd agree with that in pass rushing. He did very well there. He had a sack and four hurries in this one. A lot of it was due to the Packers having some good stunts planned against the Vikings, and the Vikings weren't able to handle it well. So Matthews was able to get pressure that way. Outside of that, he wasn't great in the other areas of play. He was thrown at twice, once allowed a first down. The other time his receiver was open, but Teddy just overthrew him. He had one tackle for a loss in the run game, which was good to see, but then a few plays where he was blocked pretty badly in the run game. So also an unnecessary roughness penalty, which doesn't help his case either. So I know that this is looking ahead a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if Matthews was able to move back to outside linebacker full-time next year. Mike Neal and Nick Perry are both free agents. Julius Peppers has been having a decent season but does have a high cap hit, and the Packers could save a lot of that money if they chose to cut him. Where at inside linebacker, they have Jake Ryan, Joe Thomas, who are seeing playing time now. Hopefully get Sam Barrington back. So even though that might not be the best trio of inside linebackers, it still might be enough for the Packers to be able to get Clay Matthews back to rushing the passer full time.
I think they absolutely want to get him back there as much as possible. It's probably going to depend perhaps on the NFL draft more than anything, if you can get an athletic player to play inside linebacker. We'll see how that plays out. Nathan, I also saw BJ Raji received a pretty unusually low grade coming out of the Vikings game. What led to that?
It was a combination of a lot of things. In terms of penalties, he had an illegal holding and an offside, even though that was declined. So that hurt his grade some. He missed a tackle, which doesn't help. And then there were a number of plays where the Vikings were able to push him off the line of scrimmage a bit, even though at times the Vikings offensive linemen were helping each other out a little bit. Still, you can't get pushed that far back off the line of scrimmage. So those were all the negatives, and then he didn't really have any positives to counteract this. He had no tackles in this one. He didn't come up with any pressures in the pass game. So when you have so many negatives and no positives to counteract that, that'll add up to a pretty bad grade. So not what you want to see when you're heading into another year of being a free agent for Raji.
Hopefully he bounces back this upcoming week in the playoffs, which we're going to look forward to here, Nathan. As we look at Washington, is Kirk Cousins as much of a threat as all the attention he's received would make it out to be? And what weapons does Kirk Cousins have to work with that I should know about?
Sure. Cousins, he had his best two games of the season in week 15 and week 16. And that's by far when they were getting the most national attention, since they were close to making the playoffs at that point. So he was getting hot at the right time when all of the eyes were on him. And he did decently in week 17 too, before they started to rest him. But before that, he was probably playing as a slightly below average quarterback. So if he continues playing like he's played in recent games, then he's as good as everyone is saying he is. In terms of receivers, he has a lot of good receivers, but no all-star receivers. The biggest threat is Jordan Reed, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Packers use a lot of dime defense, so then Micah Hyde can be lined up against Jordan Reed. But I think the Packers can do well going up against a lot of good receivers, but no great ones, since the Packers have a lot of good cornerbacks, but not necessarily a great cornerback. So I think that matches up probably well for the Packers. Washington has a good run-blocking offensive line, but they don't have too much of a threat at running back. Outside of Trent Williams, they all are vulnerable in pass protection. And like all quarterbacks, Cousins isn't as good under pressure as he is when there's no pressure. So if the Packers can get pressure on Cousins, I think that would go a long way with helping to stop Washington's offense.
On the defensive side of the football in Washington, who do the Packers have to look out for?
Washington did a great job this past offseason of rebuilding their defensive line. Chris Baker, Jason Hatcher, Ricky Jean-Francois, and Terrence Knighton have all played really well this season. However, that's going up against the part of the Packers offense that has consistently played well throughout the team's struggles, and that's their interior offensive line. So, especially if Josh Sitton can move back to left guard, I think the Packers can neutralize Washington's biggest strength on defense. Washington does have two good pass-rushing outside linebackers in Ryan Kerrigan and Trent Murphy, so I think that's the most important matchup when the Packers are on offense, is if they can protect the outside pass rush. In terms of the rest of their defense, Washington's inside linebackers, that situation's been a mess the entire season. Their linebackers have been playing a bit worse than the Packers themselves linebackers have. So if that says anything there. And then in their secondary, they do have one strength in Rashad Breeland. He's been playing really well as one of their outside cornerbacks. So I could see the Packers not throwing so much to either Adams or Jones, whoever they decide to play most at the right wide receiver spot. But the rest of the secondary is pretty vulnerable and probably the weakest secondary the Packers have faced in a long time. So if there's any team that the Packers can face to get their confidence back up in the past game, it's probably this one.
That sounds good to me. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us. Illuminating stuff as always. Appreciate your analysis, and we'll break the game down next week.
Yep, thanks again for having me. Have a good one.
Take care. Nathan Yockey joining us on Railbird Central, as he does every Wednesday here on the show. Great to have him join us, and great to have you, the listener, join us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers over the past 24 hours, here's an interesting news story that I don't think got a whole lot of attention elsewhere. But I'll tell you what, I keep track of our statistics at 24/7 Sports. This was the most trafficked article I've gotten in over a week. And you know, that's pretty interesting. The Packers just played a pretty big game this past Sunday in which the division title was on the line. And readers are more interested in this than anything else. Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson took part in the first meeting of the newly constructed NFL catch committee on Tuesday. This is a newly constructive committee, as I said, put together by the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell to find out basically if there's anything they can tweak or change about the rules regarding what or what is not a catch in the NFL. It's obviously gotten a whole lot of attention. In which passes are called incomplete if they don't, you know, complete the whole process of the catch, if that ball touches the ground whatsoever. Obviously, the Packers were involved in a very high-profile game in which this had an impact in the playoffs last season with Dez Bryant of the Dallas Cowboys. It goes way back years ago into Calvin Johnson and, an apparent touchdown he scored. Those are just a few examples of many that have had an impact and, you know, people kind of fed up a little bit in terms of not knowing what a catch is or isn't. So they're trying to put something together. Jordy Nelson, the only current NFL player taking part in this meeting. There are several other, you know, former players taking part. I know Pro Football Hall of Famer Chris Carter was one. There was several others. The committee is chaired by one with former Packers offensive coordinator Joe Philbin, of course, also the former head coach of the Miami Dolphins. He was one of six committee chairs, and they'll report to the NFL's competition committee. And that, of course, is the one that would, you know, recommend any rule changes. So just interesting. Jordy Nelson may not be, you know, playing right now, but he's still staying involved with the game and, you know, could end up having to adhere to the rules he helped shape. If he ends up having any, you know, input or insight into this, what a catch is in the NFL. So kind of interesting. Flew under a lot of people's radars. We were happy to have the traffic at 24/7 Sports. Like I said, the most traffic thing I've written in over a week is I just shared a few thoughts on the matter. And nobody else in the Packers media seemed to want to touch it. So we were happy to the Those of you who are interested, and if you haven't read it, go check it out. Just do a Google search or head right to 24/7 Sports. It's in our archives there. In other news over the past 24 hours, the Packers signed a quarterback. Always big news when you sign a quarterback. Obviously, nobody that's going to be taking the job of Aaron Rodgers anytime soon, but he at least is a guy who can be a pretty good mentor to the newly signed Ryan Williams, a rookie who was signed to a futures contract, a reserve slash future contract, which means Williams cannot be part of the team's 53-man roster this season. Basically, what it is, when the year ends, he becomes part of that 90-man offseason roster. And, you know, this is these kind of fly under the radar because, you know, players signed to future deals are just, you know, typically, you know, fringe NFL type of players. And the Packers typically re-sign their practice squad to a majority of these deals. You'll see that, you know, once the season ends, just a few days after, you'll see them sign, you know, if there's 10 members of the practice squad, they'll usually sign 8 or 9 of them to future deals. Maybe there's a guy or two they don't quite like or think, you know, they don't have much of a chance of sticking around in the future that they may not sign. But typically they bring a lot of these guys back and give them a shot for next year. And that'll be Ryan Williams. So you kind of look at this through the prism that, you know, hey, I know some people thought, hey, isn't Brett Hundley kind of the quarterback they're looking to in the future? And yeah, he is too. But you got to look at this, that Scott Tolzien is going to be a free agent when the season ends, and there's going to be no guarantee he comes back. So Ryan Williams could be the de facto number three quarterback. And I say could. There's no guarantees here. They're taking a shot on him. And you know, what no better time than to sign him now and get him a playbook and you know, let him start learning the offense. You don't get to see him on a practice field until, you know, the month of April or so as they come back for OTAs and mini camp and things like that. But, you know, at least he gets to, you know, like I said, start at least learning the playbook, and he can work at Packers facilities and train with their trainers and all those kind of things. So that's what they're doing with him. So welcome to Ryan Williams, one of the newest Packers quarterbacks on the roster. And just one other kind of interesting signing here, and again, way under the radar, but that's why you listen to this show. We'll break it down. The Packers signed a defensive lineman, William Campbell, to the practice squad, taking the place of B.J. McBride. Another practice squad defensive lineman goes on their injured reserve list, so he can no longer take part, and Campbell take his place on the roster, the, you know, the practice squad, the 10-member practice squad, just kind of to be on the scout team here in the run-up to the game against the Washington in the wild card round of the playoffs. But what's interesting here is that Campbell was a defensive lineman at the University of Michigan. His last year, I believe, in college was 2012, so he was drafted in the 2013 NFL draft by the New York Jets, who actually took him and converted him to an offensive lineman. So ever since he entered the NFL for the past 2 years, 2013, 2014, and now in 2015, as the year comes to an end, he's been an offensive lineman, first with the Jets, and then I think they spent about, you know, he spent one full season on the roster, never played in any games, was on, you know, just inactive every game. And then he sticks with them through training camp the next year. They, you know, cut him at the end of training camp. I think he catches on with the Buffalo Bills for a while, might have been on their practice squad for a while. But anyway, so it was kind of a failed experiment with trying out Campbell as an offensive lineman. And now the Packers are going to try him once again as a defensive lineman where he played in college. And he's really big. He's up to 330 pounds, so he's no small human being. I just thought this was basically an interesting move by the Packers with only a week left in the season. It basically amounts to a tryout of sorts. because, I mean, he's only going to be around as long as the Packers last in the playoffs. So he's going to have to impress them in that amount of time. And perhaps if he impresses enough, he'll be signed to one of those future contracts, just like Ryan Williams was, and presumably the majority of the practice squad will eventually be signed to. So just an interesting under-the-radar kind of move in which the Packers getting a little creative in their approach to looking for depth on the defensive line, looking for a little bit of a, perhaps a diamond in the rough. I know William Campbell. I've watched him play. He had a pretty good senior season at Michigan, and maybe he can reprise that in a Packers uniform. We'll find out. But next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Wednesday, this is the first day of practice this week as they prepare for their upcoming game in the playoffs at Washington on Sunday. It's also the first day the Packers will release an injury report this week. So we'll be looking for a few key players and what their status is. I think everybody's very interested in what David Bakhtiari and Sam Shields, what their status is. I anticipate they'll practice because they actually practiced last week as well. Packers just weren't comfortable playing them in the game, kind of erring on the side of caution. So I imagine, I have to think that they'll practice again unless the Packers just want to play it safe and don't want to risk anything with them. But, if we're looking for somebody who hasn't practiced in either of the past 2 weeks, one guy I think is interesting is Jayrone Elliott, who's arguably one of the best players on the Packers special teams and an occasional pass rusher for them. He has a quadricep injury that's prevented him from practicing for the past 2 weeks. Not at all. Not even in this limited participation category or anything like that. Packers could really, use his services. And we'll see if he's finally, after 2 weeks away, ready to come back this Wednesday. So that's what we're looking forward to. Head coach Mike McCarthy has his usual pre-practice press conference at 11 o'clock a.m. today. If you're listening to the live edition of the show and you're able to hear that in time, that he's holding that at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time on Wednesday, might be interested in checking that out. I don't, because it happens pre-practice, I don't know how much he'll be able to offer on the status of the injured players, seeing as they're not able to get onto the field quite by then. But anyway, be interesting to see what he says. Looking forward to the game, folks. We'll be back again on Friday with our monthly engagement with Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. Usually we talk to him the first Friday of every month. The first Friday was New Year's Day this year, so we didn't have a show. We're going to get Scott McKenna on now on Friday, so excited to talk to him then. And really look forward to a playoff matchup with Washington. So we'll see you, folks. Have a good day. My call to action, as usual, if you haven't done so already, we'd really, really appreciate it if you went to iTunes and give us a rating or a review or both. And again, nobody's looking for you to write a novel, just something short and sweet. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. It's the one small thing we ask in return that you do. We'd appreciate it. But have a good day, folks. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Ace in the Hole by the Radiators on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go, Pack, go.